Hi, this is Zoe Durand, and I'm a family lawyer and mediator, and you're listening to the Inside Family Law podcast. This podcast is presented by Mediation Answers in partnership with Artwork and Lawyer Magic. Over the course of these episodes, I will take you on a 360-degree deep dive into all aspects of the family law process by talking with some of the greatest minds in family. I'm hoping that through this podcast, we can really encourage interdisciplinary conversations and perspectives that allow us to go deeper into what is really going on in the family law process, and that also make us more curious in our approaches to family law and how we do what we do every day. Hi, this is Zoe Durant, and I'm doing the interviews here at the Pacifica Congress Conference. We're here live at the conference in Hobart 2023, and I'm here with Dr. Phil Watts. Could you just explain to our listeners what it is you do exactly, and I guess then tell me about what you were presenting on?
Yeah, hi, I'm a clinical and forensic psychologist, which in some ways I reckon is probably best job ever. I get to do all sorts of fun things in the legal world. My particular area of expertise is family law, so I assess families, I interview mum, dad, see the kids, write a report which is then used in court to help the judge and help work out what's best for kids.
Okay, and what were you talking on at the conference?
Yeah, the talk which I think was most useful was one on the voice of the child. So what I wanted to talk about in that is get across that children need to be heard, but we have to be very careful about including them in something like a legal process. If they say too much or get too involved, then it's stressful. If they don't involve, then they feel powerless and anxious, and that's not helpful either.
Okay, so what are some of the ways in which the listeners of this podcast have sort of different levels of involvement. A lot of them are lawyers, some of them, so they probably know a bit more about the process, the legal process. Some of them are actually people separating as well, who listen in to the interviews. What are some of the ways in which children's voices are currently heard in the process?
In terms of how they're currently heard, once we get into the legal process, most of their voice is heard through the parents. So the children talk to parents, or the parents ask questions, and then the parents think that's what the kids' voices are. Once you get into the system, there are some processes where they may appoint somebody, so they can appoint a court counsellor, a single expert witness, the children might see a therapist, but through these different channels, then the kids may be heard. One of the points I wanted to raise is that when parents talk to kids, kids want to survive. They don't want to lose their parents' love and attention. So if a parent asks a child, for example, where they want to live, they may say something to one parent and say something different to the other parent because they don't want to upset their parents.
Mm-hmm. So do you think sometimes when parents' best intentions are, I guess, representing sort of secondhand, that what they think is their children's voice, it's not always exactly maybe what the children might think or feel about something, or it's a certain skewed aspect of, because the child's trying to please that parent perhaps?
Yeah, there's essentially what happens if you put kids in a conflict, there are five things they can do. They can speak their mind, and some kids are pretty good at expressing their opinion, but most of the time parents are telling kids what to do, so it's hard for them to have an opinion. Then kids can duck for cover, and there's two ways you duck for cover. One is tell parents what they want to hear, or the other is tell them nothing. And that's where parents may not get a message, or they may get the wrong message. The other two things kids can do is they'll take sides. If conflict is bad enough, they'll align with the person who may be the most powerful, the one they fear losing the most, the one they love the best. There's lots of reasons why they'll take sides. And then the last thing which can happen is if you've got two parents who you really love, you're really close to, you really trust, and they're both telling you different things, you end up really messed up. You don't trust anybody.
Gosh, okay. And you mentioned at the start there's that kind of, I guess, balance between children's voices being heard and them not feeling
disempowered, I suppose, but on the other hand, not having so much pressure and all that kind of, you know, how do we balance that out? Like, what do you think is a good way in which children, whether it's something we do now in the family law process, something we could do to have children's voices heard, but not in a way that's going to, you know, make them under extreme pressure?
Well, there's a few different parts to that. One of the things I think absolutely essential for children is truth. If you don't have truth, then you can't trust your parents. So what's told to a child at different points of their life should remain true. So what you tell a 2-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 20-year-old, or a 25-year-old should still be true. But the amount of truth, the amount of information increases with age. Mm-hmm. So at a 4-year-old or a 6-year-old, hearing that daddy forgot to use his words and used his hands instead, so mummy's left, it's still true at 25 when mum goes, she's a victim of domestic violence. But and the child will still trust the parents because that's what the story's been. But if mum says she left for one reason, but later the child finds out a different reason, then you can't trust. So one of the really key points is, as I say, layers of truth. It's got to be at an appropriate level for their age and development.
Now, that's interesting what you say, and that I've heard somewhere, and I'm not in psychology, that it's sort of the information you give a child, you kind of give it to the information to which they can ask. Like, for example, this is a bit sideways, but the birds and the bees, you might, a child might say, where do babies come from when they're very young, and you'd be like, well, mummies, you know, tummies. Then that's true. You mightn't go into all the other details, but then as you layer on more, you can give more information as they ask more detailed questions.
Yeah, correct. There's a degree to which, if you ask children questions, what they think they want and what you may think they're asking could be very different things. So a child might ask, where do babies come from, not because they want to understand conception, but simply because they want to know what size they are, or, you know, some little
some
thing.
Other reason.
That's where it's being able to understand how children think and what they may be trying to ask. The other thing is, when kids are going through a difficult time, often they can be self-limiting in what they want to know. So I remember when our dog died, my daughter is incredibly intelligent, but a little bit on the spectrum. And what she did was she wanted to know how dogs decomposed. My son, on the other hand, put his hands on his ears and was going la, 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 and not wanting to hear anything because he didn't need that much information. So one of the things parents need to listen to is what they're actually asking, and then answer to that level, and then if they need more, let them ask the next level of question.
And now, just a couple of words about Lawyer Magic, a one-day course on the secret sauce to law practice scale-up. We demystify all the parts around being a lawyer that you actually need to know to thrive in law, but usually no one teaches you. The three pillars to Lawyer Magic are the law of attraction, being magnetic, branding, marketing, and positioning yourself as an expert, the honeymoon phase, drawing clients to you, networking, building referral chains, keeping the spark alive, keeping clients happy along the whole journey and getting paid seamlessly, but in a way that clients understand the value of your work. Nicole Evans said, Zoe and Roey were fantastic. They tailored this course around our firm and our needs. We all took away a lot of practical tips and new ideas to implement on a day-to-day basis. We believe the real magic happens by identifying what is naturally unique about you, including your special passions, and showing how to amplify and communicate this. Exhibit A, hopefully like I'm doing in this podcast.
I mean, I guess you're going to get more nitty-gritty, and I don't know if this is so much that this sort of what you presented on, but I guess I'm just curious what you think anyway about it. You know, obviously there's ways in which children are, you know, are seen, heard in the process, for example, with the independent children's lawyer representing a child, or, you know, as you mentioned, there can be a counsellor meet to the child. You know, the reports that are written by experts, children are interviewed and they're sort of represented in that way. What do you think about, like, those processes, or is there anything else we can do? Like, for example, I once interviewed a judge who was one of the few judges that did actually meet direct with children. Not many judges do that. But do you think there are benefits and negatives to, you know, like, what are your thoughts about the way in which children are can be in that core process.
Yeah, well, that was exactly the essence of what I was talking about, is that including children in the court process, we have to be very, very careful. So a mature teen talking to the judge about a particular issue may be quite beneficial. But we've also then got to look to see what we're dealing with in terms of the skill of the person asking the question. Judges are trained in law, they're not trained in psychology. We have a recently appointed judge in the family court in Western Australia who was one of WA's leading independent children's lawyers. So she has 30 years experience talking to children, finding out what their views are. She would be amazing as a judge if a child had to talk to her. But there are plenty of judges who've come from different backgrounds who've never had to deal with talking to children at a professional level, who would probably just end up terrifying the child. They terrify the lawyers. So how's a child going to cope?
So you're saying it sort of depends. It sort of depends.
It depends.
Where the child's at, who is the person with their skill set.
Yep.
Maybe bringing that view in. I mean, is there concerns as well, I guess, around backlash for a child if they're sort of asked direct questions about things and then the parent's like, why did you say that? Or that, you know, that kind of aspect to it.
Yeah, well, there's backlash from the parents. Why did you say that? There's also a really fundamental thing which comes up quite regularly, and that is children have a belief that they were able to decide the question. So why are we talking to the judge? Because I'm going to tell the judge where I want to live.
Yeah.
And in the mind of a child, the judge is going to do that. But we know that when you're in court, even parents can't choose anymore, let alone the child. So then the child goes, well, no one listens to me, no one cares about me, I'm not heard. So what it does is it actually can be very disempowering if you've got an opportunity to express what you want and nobody acts on it. So one of the points I raised in the workshop is the fact that I think we need to make it clear to children that we want to understand what they like and why they like it to help the adults make the best decision, not what is your wish because we're going to grant it. Because if you don't grant it, then I'm going to be disillusioned. So we really should be calling
it... And feel betrayed and all that kind of stuff.
Correct. So really we should be talking about likes, not wishes. Why do you like it?
Interesting, you know, shift there, because we often talk about the wishes of a child, you know, in family law, the lawyers, we talk about, well, what about the wishes of the child, and maybe sometimes parents, I don't know what parents say to children who are going through separation, they might talk about, you can, you know, you have your wishes heard, but really, it's not wishes, genie in a bottle, maybe it's more the likes, preferences, and the adults will make a decision.
Which correct.
And that they will consider what you think and feel, but it will be other factors.
Correct. So when I interview children, I say to them things like, I need to understand what you like and why you like it, so I can help the big people make the decisions. I want to know what your wishes are. And even if I go more direct, I'll go, if it was up to you, but it's not up to you, but if it was, how would you do it? How would you make it? What would be practical? What you know, and why would you like
so
that?
So the expectations are managed. So then it all flows on.
Correct.
Like, I saw that person, you know, I saw Phil, and then I told him this, and I thought that would happen, because you've explained to them when you met them, this is just, you take, you know, you're
correct.
Listening to their likes, but it's not a guarantee of anything.
And that's exactly the key point.
Because that would break more trust. You know, we're talking about
absolutely.
Trust broken.
Yeah.
Through the process.
Nobody listens to me. The adults don't listen to me.
Well, they were listening to me, and they didn't.
Yeah. Correct.
And then that, whereas I guess they can feel, well, I was listened to, you know, Phil said that he was going to listen to my likes, my preferences, but there wasn't a guarantee that that was just going to be one thing.
Exactly. Mm. Yep.
Mm. So they know it may not be automatically what they, you know, it's just what they would like.
And that's exactly the point of it. And then the other thing which I talked about in the workshop was that even within the existing system, there are some clever things which judges are able to do. And one of those things I talked about was, in one particular case where mum and dad had very different views of what had occurred in terms of family violence, and mum had actually stabbed dad at a handover and she'd been jailed for it. Now she's out of jail and going to have time with the kids. She blamed dad for bringing the knife. The court had found that she didn't. So these kids were going to be put forward into the future with very different views. And even if you had a court order which says you're not allowed to talk to the child, you'd have to be very naive to think that this mum will not at some point express her view, and dad, who's traumatised and a difficult person in his own right, not tell his version. So how do these children cope with two competing versions? So the court came up with an independent statement of truth, which the judge went through all of the legal decisions which were made and why they were made, and then sent it to me as a child psychologist to then turn it into a language which the child would understand and relate to. And then there was a time made for the children in that case to come and meet with me, and I read them a statement of truth. And that way, at least, they had some way of navigating between mum and dad.
Because that's a pretty intense situation, you know.
Correct.
Okay. So, there. I mean, I guess it's the court does have the ability to do things like that. You know, there are different creative things that can be done, such as
absolutely.
What you just described.
Absolutely. And that's the whole point of it, is that there is the opportunity for, even within the existing system, and talk to anybody in the system, they'll go, yes, it's inefficient, yes, it's flawed, yes, it needs more resources, yes, it needs a complete overhaul. But even if we don't go down that path and we just go, can we help kids more? Well, being able to explain to the kids why a decision's made for them, you know, we're talking, in that case I was just talking about, there's a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old at that point. I'd had 10 years of involvement with them to get to that point. But the 15-year-old had already been Googling online about mum's murder trial, you know, mum's stabbing trial. So the idea that kids are not going to access information from relatives, from parents, from the media, it would be really naive.
So then, knowing that they will access that information, I guess, well, what's the version, the version that we're going to give to the children?
Correct. And that gives them at least a starting point in life to go. And part of it, the judgment says, you know, mum and dad have very different views of it, but that doesn't mean you don't love mum and dad, it just means they'll never agree. But this is what we know about the official version.
And now a few words about artwork, where we bring art to your place of work. As some of you might know, away from the law, I have pursued a passion for art, exhibiting in London, Sydney, Melbourne, throughout China, and at a contemporary show in the Louvre in Paris. I'm now sharing my love of art and creativity with workplaces. I'd love to hear from you if you would be interested in team bonding art lessons, curated pieces for your office, or making your next corporate event a showstopper with a piece of art created live for your guests. I'm also interested in any of the other ideas you might have about how to inject creativity into your place of work and shake things up, hopefully in a good way. The benefit of working with me is that uniquely I am both an artist and a lawyer, so I have an understanding of the law firm corporate events context and can chew the fat with your guests about law, life, art, and my creative process whilst I create your special piece for your firm. Bronwyn O'Loan said, "This was truly an amazing experience. We keep getting comments from those that joined us on our special evening about how inspiring it was to watch you create such beautiful art. The memories will live on in the artwork, which will be hung proudly in our meeting space."
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I mean, anything else that came out from the dialogue, like that, you know, was a sort of key takeaway, I guess, from your talk?
Yeah, I think in the material which we've covered, some of the key things I wanted to get across was the layers of truth and the fact there are things we can do now. At the end of the day, the point I would like to stress more than anything is children are not little adults. They have a unique way of viewing the world, and we need to understand them. Right at the end of my workshop, somebody said, "So what? How does autism affect these decisions?" And my answer to that is, at the end of the day, autism means lots of different things to lots of different kids. What we have to do is understand what this child is like and how it's going to impact this child's life, and whether they've got autism or not, or ADD or not, whether they've got a fussy temperament or an easy temperament, whatever it is going to be what impacts them. So the better we know what the child's like, the better the court knows what the child's like, the better we can come up with sensible recommendations.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like really kind of whatever the situation of the child, looking at them individually, looking at that child individually. Is what you're saying? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean two things. Looking at the child as a unique individual, what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses, what are their characteristics? And the other thing I mean is putting the child first.
Yeah.
So if we go, is it mum's, dad wants 50-50 because it's fair, and mum wants dad to be majority care because she's always been their mother, and that's a precedent and status quo. And but what's actually more important than mum and dad? The kids. So if we can go, what is the fundamental thing these children need to get the best dose and best balance of mum and dad? Because one of the things to think about is before separation, the maximum a child can get from parenting is 200%. 100% mum, 100% dad. In reality, COVID, we actually had some times where it was close to that because everyone's in the same house all the time. Most of the time, somebody has work, somebody has school, somebody has this. So we never get 200% time. But the maximum after separation isn't 100%, it's 50%. Because you never have time with both parents present. So the time is reduced. So how do we get the best balance with what mum's got and what dad's got, which can work for these children? If you want what's best, find a good partner, make it work and stick to it. But if you can't, then we have to go, what's the next best arrangement for these kids?
Any takeaways? Because there is a lot of lawyers listening into these interviews. In your role, any, I guess, tips for lawyers or things to bear in mind when working with a professional such as yourself, with psychologists such as yourself?
There's a few things. One is if parents are human and parents want to win, parents want to win the fight, win their rights, win their share. The only thing which overrides that is, for some people, is their children. So by putting the child first, people will agree if it's best for the child. So anything you can do in the process which allows for a child's voice to be heard, even little things like having a picture of the kids on the table when they're mediating arrangements. So this is about these guys, not about the parents. That will help. If you're dealing with an expert, get a term of reference which isn't negative. How's this affecting the children? Have a positive. What is a positive contribution of both parents? What is the nature of this child? So we actually highlight the strength of it. And WA in our terms of reference, the first term of reference is what is the age, maturity and development of the child, not what are the risks and problem behaviour. That comes halfway down the term of reference. So even little things like when you draft a term of reference, start with what the child's like and then go to what the problems are. So if you can make the child first, that would help. Now, this particularly is tricky where lawyers are representing a party because you see your obligation is to the party. But if you can see your obligation is to the party, but the children are the innocents where there's an ethical and moral obligation, if you put the children on the table, not just the party's position on the table, then you'll get greater respect from that parent in terms of what you achieve, and the outcome for the children will be better.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's all been really, really interesting to chew the fat with you. Where can people locate you if they want to continue the conversation or hear more about the work you do?
Yeah, I'm in Perth, Western Australia, mindstatepsychology.com.au. If you go there, you can track down the details. That's got all the emails and the web address. And again, different conferences and things, I pop up there. Always happy to talk on different topics associated with this. I've written a few books. One of the ones in the family law, which is really useful, is Shared Care or Divided Lives, so what's best for kids when parents separate. Another one, when you're working with people who have come out of dysfunctional relationships and are looking at repartnering and lacking confidence, I've got a book called How to Find Love and Not a Psycho.
Sounds very interesting. Well, look, if you want to find out more, I'll also put some links to this podcast and also put some links to the Pacifica Congress So you can join there as well. Thanks very much for chatting.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inside Family Law. I hope you got a lot out of it and that it has sparked a lot of questions and conversations that you'll keep having with your colleagues in the area. If you do want to stay connected with me, then please reach out on LinkedIn. You can find me, I'm Zoe Duran, or you can reach me on Instagram at Mediation Answers. My website is www.mediationanswers.com.au. If you have any fabulous ideas for a podcast interview, then please be in touch with me. Also, if you would like me to cover your family law conference, for example, or any other conference or event, I'm more than happy to discuss if this would work. So please also do reach out. Thanks very much, and I hope you listen in next time.